Flowing Water, Falling Flowers today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Moon. Zixuan Collins came from China to teach in the Quad Cities, but she's here to tell us about her new novel, On Scribble. You have come a long way, haven't you?
Yes.
The music is repeating. It just wants to keep going and going. You came from the Tibetan Plateau, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in a place called Kanding, which is on the East Tibet Plateau. It's in Sichuan Province, so it's not part of Tibet, but it's on the Tibet Plateau on the east side, yes.
That's a very rarefied atmosphere to live in.
Yes. It was, I think, maybe 4,000 meters above sea level.
Wow.
2,000, actually. Not 4,000. Yeah. 2,000, so, yeah.
What was it like decompressing to come down to sea level?
I grew up there, and I left when I was 17 to go to university. And after that, my parents actually were not from there. They went there after their schooling, and they went there to work. And so I grew up there, but after I left, I just only went back to visit. So it's been a while since I coming down from the mountain.
Take us through your odyssey. You started there and you wound up here.
Yes.
How did that all take us through that that trip?
Yes. So like I said, I left when I was 17 to go to university. So I went to Sichuan University, which is in Chengdu. That's the capital city of Sichuan Province in the southwest part of China. And then I studied biology. And after that, I went to grad school right there in the same university. And I got a master's degree in cell biology. And then I went to this place called Guangxi Province. I taught at a university called Agriculture University for 5 years. But one of the years was actually... I actually worked for an investment company to be an English translator for them. And then a lot of friends of mine have come to U.S. to study. So I said I always wanted to get a PhD, a higher degree, but why not look for somewhere different? So I just went to all the exams, the GRE, the TOEFL, and then I applied for schools here in the U.S., I wanted to study something related to biology, but more like human nature. You know, I worked with mice in the lab, and I really did not quite like it very much. So I said I wanted to work with humans, but maybe not in medical school. So nutrition, I feel like it was a really good choice, you know, good nutrition, prevention of diseases. So I applied for nutrition schools here in the U.S., and Iowa State was the one that actually gave me a full scholarship and assistantship. So I didn't have to pay anything myself to be able to come. So I came January 1997. So I ended up in Iowa State, got a master's degree again because my major professor, she's like, you need to have something in your pocket. You know, what if you get hit by a car tomorrow? You know, get a degree first, you know. So I got a master's degree and then I continued forward and got a PhD. Work with this instrument that broke down all the time. So it took me a whole 7 years in Ames to get my degree. And after that, I went to University of Iowa and I worked as a postdoc researcher in the biochemistry department. And then my husband has always been working here in the Quad Cities. So I was looking for a job around here, and then Blackhawk College happened to have biology instructor position open. So we moved to here in 2004.
You know, it's interesting, as a biology student myself, to see how biologists sometimes wind up.
Yes. I found there are a lot of writers actually have a biology background. I don't know why is that. I'm like, it's the DNA. it's about.
Well, it's true, though, and you're teaching. And I looked up some of your stuff at the Blackhawk, mm-hmm. and your students say that you're a tough grader, but a really good teacher.
Thank you. Yeah, they're very gracious, my students. Yeah, like this mug they gave to me.
Wow. Yeah, that's
yes,
that's
I
student,
need to,
that's
yes.
student size.
Yes. Yeah.
But writing? I mean, come on. You're not writing about biology. You're going into dreams and researching the past and so on.
Yeah.
What inspired you to start writing?
I actually always have wanted to be a writer since I was a little kid. My composition, you know, when you're in school, you do composition, and I was so proud, and usually my teacher would read my composition in front of the whole class, so I really like writing. My dad was a really good writer, too, even though he went into a different area, but the two things I think my parents said, well, you cannot really go to study writing. Number one, you need a job, which, yeah. you know, parents all over the world, right, not just in right. China, will tell this to their kids, yeah, you want to be a writer, you know, like, how are you going to pay bills? But number two is, I think particularly in China, a lot of places, like, it's dangerous to play with words, you know. So if you are a scientist, you study chemistry, physics. My dad was actually a physics major. You would work with something that has nothing to do with politics or words or anything. You are not going to be in any way, shape, or form be in danger of them any kind. So they said, well, you need to go into science. And of all the science subjects, and I like biology the most. So I wound up studying biology. But I've always liked writing, even though I never really took it seriously. You know, I wrote some poems, which I think a lot of young people have done that. You know, when you're young, that's when you feel like writing poems, maybe. So I had some poems published in anthologies in China, but never really got into writing seriously. And then, of course, you know, went to college, get married, have a kid. And I said, well, if I don't do it, I don't know when I can do it. So about 5 years ago in the summer, so as a teacher in the summer is when I have some time, I was sitting there waiting for my son's camp, summer camp, and I said, oh, here's a story idea I had. So I wrote it, and I showed two friends. They said, well, it's not too bad. Didn't put me to sleep. And I said, maybe that's not too bad. Maybe I could do it. Didn't put you to sleep. So I was writing some short stories, and then I found out the Midwest Writing Center here in town, there's a newspaper and in Quad City Times, and it says they have this contest called Iron Pen Contest. Right. So I said, hey, this looks fun. You know, what can hurt? You know, it's only $10. You know? So paid for the fee, and I entered that contest. And then I got placed third place that year. And I was like, whoa, this could be fun. So I showed up, and the award ceremony, I read my thing. I was like all shaking because I was like, everybody here is real writer, and I'm just pretend and fake. But Writing Center has just been so wonderful. I met a lot of friends there, writers. They're very encouraging. And then I also discovered they have workshops. So I started taking workshops and taking writing more seriously, and then just keep writing and keep going. And that's how the writing really came about.
Well, Midwest Writing Center just got a plug there, Roald.
Right. Yeah. I went back to what you said about 2 minutes or 3 minutes ago, that writing is political. And we could do a whole session on just that that idea, because you know, in the United States, we don't tend to think of it as political, although it really is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you stop to think about it, well, and I suppose especially in China, mm-hmm. that's something to consider.
I think the thing is that writing expresses a view, a way of life, and so on, and you may not think it's political. But people who want to keep society under control will see it as political.
Yes.
And problems ensue from that point on.
Well, I mean, writing has a bias here. I mean, here's a simple English example. If you said Don's book, the abbreviation is Don his book.
Yeah.
And if I say Xi Xuan's book,
yeah,
it's Xi Xuan, his book, right?
Yeah.
Same. There is no female
yes.
abbreviation.
Yes. Yes. Actually, the words, they're two different words, but the pronunciation is the same. So
right.
I always have trouble, like when I'm trying to describe somebody, even my son is correcting me, like, it's her. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's her. But I have to think about whether it's her or him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We definitely need some neutral pronouns.
Well, we have them now, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, when people greet each other now, the standard question you're supposed to ask is, what's your pronoun?
Pronoun, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, a lot of times the...
No, that's, I mean, that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, I start to do that in my signature as a professor, just to make students who might have, be sensitive with that, or they want to have a particular pronoun
right.
to make them feel like I,
right.
you know, I won't judge them or I will be on their
right.
side.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, people get all... men out of shape when they're talking about transgender, but the fact is that all of us have estrogen and testosterone
yes,
in
yeah,
a different
that,
balance.
Yeah, that's biology. We always talk about
right.
that, yes.
Yeah, and you sometimes they express themselves in ways that over which you have very little control.
Yes.
And we don't want to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
We prefer that those people just leave us alone and stay out of the public eye. But that's not just.
Yes.
Because you can't help who you are.
Yes.
And sometimes discovering who you are is a real problem.
Yes.
But you found that you're a novelist. When did you start writing this?
So it was 3 years ago. I, again, took back to the Midwest Writing Center. I was taking their summer conference, David R. Collins
right.
Writers Conference. I was taking this workshop called Novel Revision, which really was funny because I didn't have a single page of novel, you know. But I said, well, I'm going to use it someday, right? Like, just take the class and, you know, figure out how to revise. So you have to do exercises. So I wrote a saying of this novel because I always had the idea to write a novel based on He Chuan, which is the city in the novel is called the Three Rivers, which is based on He Chuan. That's where I was born. But I never actually lived there, and that was my mom's hometown. And I grew up hearing all kinds of stories, you know, like when you hear stories from your grandma, uncles, aunts, and mom. And one of the stories was about dream, actually. So my mom said some of her aunt had gone to sweep the tombs of ancestor, and then she fell asleep, and she woke up, spoken in this completely different voice, and then talking about there's some forgotten ancestor, forgotten tomb, and they need to go look for it. So they went to look for it, and they found it. It like my mom told me the story as if like there's nothing weird about it, you know. So I just grew up hearing things like that. So I said I wanted to write a story. So I wrote like a little paragraph, and that's when I started to have characters and the major events of the story I think I knew. And 1 week after that workshop is when I wrote the first 4,000 words. But it took a whole year to write the first draft. I actually finished the first draft when I was visiting my parents in China and when I revisited my birthplace. So I took pictures and I looked in the city, how I described the city. And then took another year to revise before I feel comfortable to show it to people, beta readers, or to show people and then get some feedback. And then last year, and the writers' conference again, Midwest Writing Center has this pitch session where you can pitch your book to them. So I signed up for that, and I said, well, this is going to be a really friendly audience. You know, even if my book really is really awful, and they won't say it's awful, and they'll just say, you can do this to kind of change a little bit or improve. And I was really shocked. And then they told me they liked the book and they wanted to publish it. I remember I was on the way back from Cedar Rapids, took my son for a doctor's appointment. And so my husband was driving and I was checking email, and here's this email from Writing Center saying, hey, congratulations, we want to publish your book. And I was like, really? I just thought it's a good exercise to pitch your book. So I'm so grateful. And then it took another year after that to edit and get it polished to the point.
Did you have help with the editing?
Yes. So I Misty Urban from Writing Center. She is my editor, and she's just so awesome. I already know which part of the book I like, which part is kind of weak. But you spend so much time with your book, I feel like I was developing this tunnel vision. Like, I can't really see how can you improve it. So I saw Misty was like, as an editor, she's knocking down the walls of the tunnel. And then she said, hey, look here. And I look, and it's a new world. And I was like, I know how to change that. So I felt her editing has brought the book to a really, really whole new level to make it so much better and stronger.
Mm-hmm. Explain the title. I love the title.
So the flowing water basically is about the city called the Three Rivers. And that's a city where there are three rivers converge. They're all branches of Yangtze River, so pretty big rivers in Sichuan province. And they converge. So I was thinking about the river is the main setting. And also I was thinking about time is also flowing forward just like a water, you know.
Right.
You know, you have heard philosophy talking about, is this water I step in the same water as you stepped in like a minute ago? So like time is flowing. Flowers, all the female characters except for one are named after flowers. So this is the tradition of the family, name their girls by flowers. And then, of course, people have long gone, but how are the stories shape us is still around. And that's how I came up with this title of the book.
Flowing water, falling flowers.
Yeah.
Can you read us something?
Yes. So there's a small section I wanted to read from chapter 3. So this is the main character, Rose. She is a art history professor, and she's have some major losses in her professional life as well as personal life. So she decided to go back to China with her mom. And this passage I'm going to read is when she got on the airplane and then she had this weird dream.
Okay.
That's kind of important for the rest of the book. Several weeks passed. My mom was happy that she had put some color in my cheeks by stuffing me with food on a daily basis. It was finally the day to leave for Chengdu. Our luggage had been lighter each time as we visited China. When I was younger, we brought various items and were hard to come by on the mainland. Cameras, watches, electronic appliances, anything that was allowed on an airplane and could be stuffed into our suitcases. Now everything is available there and cheaper, except for designer brands that were not fake. I decided to bring Homemade is her cousin, a small plum-colored Kate Spade shoulder bag. As soon as we finished the first meal on the plane, I tried to get some sleep. The cabin was dim. Most people, including my mom, next to me on the aisle seat, were already in their reclined positions, sleeping or at least trying to. The teenagers had their headphones on and tablets in hand. The plane was filled to the brim. I was thankful that mom paid extra for more legroom. I put on my sleep mask and noise-canceling headphone. I had learned from my past travel experience that having as much sleep as possible was vital in reducing jet lag. Usually, I had no trouble sleeping on an airplane. Good, dreamless sleep. But this time, I had the strange sensation of being nowhere, suspended in midair, not able to go back where I came from, and yet not be able to see where I was going. And in the darkness and the muffled silence, everything that surfaced in my brain became amplified. I saw Harrington and his wife. So Harrington was the guy she was having an affair with, but broke up with her. I saw Harrington and his wife walking down a flower-strewn path. He in a pale blue dress shirt and she a lovely flowy yellow dress. I was in the shadow of an enormous cypress tree, trying to hide. But Harrington turned and looked straight in my eyes. Sorry, can't walk with you. You're fired. He said, and poof, they were gone. I started to run, humiliated. Then the running turned into flying. All of a sudden, I was in front of a tall stone building, a place I had never been to before. It was Harrington's office. Campus. I recognized the building because I had seen it in the pictures he sent me. But the grass, the trees, the flowers, they were from my campus. In my confusion, I heard someone calling from the top of a handsome tall building. Rose, here. I know you're coming. Wait for me. I waited, my heart thumping in my throat. That voice was clearly Harrington's, even though I could not see him. But when that voice got close enough, I realized it was not Harrington. It was a huge jet black crow. Its wings spreading wide, its eyes shiny, its claws stretching out to grab me. I tried to run but could not move. I screamed, but no sound came out. I closed my eyes and was prepared to give myself to loss when I was plucked up and taken above the clouds. It was my grandma Pearl who saved me. I last saw her in 1993, shortly before she passed away. "Grandma Pearl, Grandma Pearl, where did you come from?" I asked. "Oh, Mei Gui," she called out my Chinese name. "My dear child, how have I missed you? Please go to the temple and find my grandmother. She has been lonely and sad for too long." "What are you talking about, Grandma Pearl? Do you mean Great Grandma Iris?" The wind was rushing by, and I was afraid and had not heard her correctly. I was afraid I could not understand her Chongqing dialect. "No, not my mom, my grandma. What a waipo. My grandma, my grandma. What's her name? What does she look like?" I was getting desperate as I lowered to the ground. "Don't drop me, Grandma Pearl," I screamed. "Rose, Rose," someone was shaking me and removing my mask and headphones. "Wake up, Mei Mei." The rumbling sound of the engine flooded my ear and the cabin lights went on, blinding me. My mother was the one waking me up, and she looked worried. A couple of people stared at us. They quickly turned their heads when they saw me staring back. I wiped the sweat from my forehead and caught my breath. I had a nightmare. I saw Grandma Pearl, and she told me to look for her grandmother. My mom fixed a stunned gaze on me. Before she said anything, the loudspeaker announced and all passengers needed to have their seat belts fastened, the chairs in the upright position, and their tray tables stowed away. We were about to land in Chengdu. Good, no more weird dreams, I thought. Then I heard my mom. "Rose, now you two, hand the dream," she said, putting up her chair. Thank you.
You two had the dream. That's very interesting.
It is, yeah. Yeah. We're before we run out of time, mm-hmm. Where can we get the book?
So you can get that from my website, which is xhcollins.com. Mm-hmm. And then you can get it from Midwest Writing Center's bookstore on mwcqc.org, the book site. And if you wanted to read ebook, Kindle version, and you can get that on Amazon.
Well, you know, it is fascinating that more than two people have the same dream, right?
Yes.
And that gets your attention right away.
Yes.
A shared dream takes you into another realm.
Yes.
So does the whole novel then move back and forth between?
So there are two storylines. Yes. Yeah, there's a current storyline, which is set in a little bit in the U.S. and then present day China. And then the other storyline is set at the beginning of the 20th century in China, about 100 years ago.
Okay.
Are you immediately planning another book?
Oh, I'm already halfway through the first draft.
Is it a sequel to this one or a totally
different? It's not a sequel to this one, but I promised my parents I would write one based on my mom's hometown and one based on my dad's hometown. So the second book is based on my dad's hometown.
Yeah, so it turns out that you're a biologist, but you're really a writer.
I'm really into it. It gives me so much joy. I really should have done this a long time ago, but it's never too late, I guess.
What is there about writing that, I mean, I don't think you're alone or even a rare person, because everybody sort of has a book somewhere.
Yes, that's absolutely true. It's just building the world and getting lost in the world. And I really like to write fiction. You know, some people say, well, your life is interesting, write like a memoir. But there are a lot of graduate students like me coming from China. So I don't really think my story is that interesting. But I'm more interested in building world, writing fiction, but to tell the truth in fiction. Truth about, you know, relationship, human condition, love, and family, and friendship, and stuff like that.
How many books do you think you have in you?
Right now, I have four planned. Like, I have idea what it's going to be about. I just have to find the time and sit down.
Well, I have three books, but I've not written a line. So
there's just so much other things going on. You know, it's really, really hard. That's like the hardest thing is to be able to sit down and write a few lines each day, I guess.
That's true. You know, it's
is that how you do it? I mean, do you...
No, I don't write every day, especially when I'm teaching. I have made a table, which I call my writing log. So I will write chapter one written at this time, chapter written at this time. And a lot of times I'll notice I have gone for months without writing anything. You know, when work gets really busy, you know, my priority is to prepare class and teach and grading paper, helping students, help my son. So I go on for like months without writing, but I just keep at the back of my head, and I'm thinking about it all the time. And somebody said, even if you don't get to write, do something about it, about your writing. You know, like you read something, you did some research, and you've done something about it, and that'll keep you going.
Do you have writers that you particularly like to read?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I have my little list.
Okay.
I thought that might be a question. Then come up. So, of course, as a Chinese person, you know, we talk about this four Chinese classics. That was a huge influence on me. So that would be Dream of the Red Chambers, Journey to the West, Water Margin. Now, Water Margin is about this bandits. And there was a spinoff. I just saw a Chinese-American writer, I think. She's going to rewrite this whole story, but all the bandits are going to be women and queer people. So it's going to be really interesting. I'm looking forward to that. And then Romance of the Three Kingdoms. So those are the four classics. And so good storytelling. And I love the martial arts book, like they called Wuxia by Jin Yong. And that was very, very a huge influence on me. And then I also really love Zhang Ailin or Eileen Chang in English. And Lin Yutang, I love him a lot. Like his last book was published in the 30s and 40s, but he just really wonderful. And then there's a Taiwanese writer called Sam Mao that was very influential on me. English, I love a couple of writers. Like Lisa C is one of my favorite because she writes historical novel, which is kind of my story here also. And she does really good research and good plot, but also good language. I really love Su Man Kid because she writes historical novel, and she also is personal inspiration because she actually published her first novel when she was 52, like the same age as I am. So that was very inspiring. And then I love Haruki Murakami. I haven't read he's Japanese, of course. I read both in Chinese and English.
Well, lots of his work takes place in two worlds like yours does.
Yes, so that's really like that magic.
What's the one about in which there are two moons? And,
yes, you know, yes, there was. Yeah, that was the 1984, 1984. Like over 900 pages.
I love that.
Of my first books.
I love that.
My favorite book.
Well, I don't imagine you're going to stop teaching anytime soon, but keep writing.
Yes,
because,
thank you.
Because, you know, you've given us something interesting to think about just in that excerpt from Flowing Water and Falling Flowers. We've been talking to Zijuan Collins, who is the author of that new book, and we recommend that you take a look at it because the shared dreams is a really good idea. And thanks for sharing time with us. That'll do it for today. I'm Don Woot with Roll Tweet. Join us next time for another edition of Scribble.